Hi, and welcome to Raycast, the Path of Exile podcast. The podcast for Path of Exile diehards, tryhards, casual, and hardcore alike. I am your host, Xanth, and don't call it a comeback. He's been here for years. Back in the podcasting game, Leviathan, as my co-host.
Hey, it's good to be here with you. Glad we can reconnect and do a thing where we talk to each other again. Because otherwise, if we didn't podcast, I just would have no reason to talk to
We never talk ever.
you.
And
Ow.
it wouldn't be right to kick off anything involving Path of Exile without our special guest for episode one, and maybe many episodes to come, Ziggy D.
G'day. Thank you for having me on the show. I appreciate it. I do love doing a talking thing, as you so well put it, Leviathan. It's I appreciate the opportunity to talk about the things I enjoy as much as I can. And yeah, it can be difficult to get that, you know, in real life. Podcast is like, oh yes, other people who are willing to listen to me. Yes.
And
Suffer.
we were sharing pre-show. I've been listening to you for years, so this is like a treat. This is like my own kind of personal Ziggy D stream that I get to tune
Very
into. And
self-indulgent.
I think that is why I
What
do
shall I do
this.
for you next?
Just, you know, give me a good day, and you know, that's all I
Yeah.
need.
G'day,
How
mate.
you
Thanks for
going?
having me on the show. How you going?
So Ziggy, as we kind of kick this off, and this
Yes.
is, you know, episode number one, what's your journey when it comes to all of this? You know, we're all hyped for Path of Exile. We were sharing a little bit pre-show our own experiences with Path of Exile. How did you get into this that you've become so synonymous with this game that we all enjoy?
You want the long version or the short version
This is a
of
podcast, and
my
we
life
have
story,
time
basically?
for the long version if you want to start, you know, from
You
birth.
basically did just open the show by saying, "Hey Ziggy, what's your life story?" I mean, I'll tell you if you
I think the
want.
people want to know.
My life story effectively is that sometime around university, I was looking for an out for my brain, since I was not that interested in what I was doing, both in work and in university. And I found StarCraft 2, actually. It was the game that I found that really just grabbed my brain and tickled me in just the right ways that had me thinking about it and not much else. And I needed an outlet for that. So I started writing about it in various places around the StarCraft community. And I discovered that side of gaming that is a bit more involved. That I wasn't really kind of fully aware of before that point. Because, you know, I played plenty of games throughout my life, and I would have, as, you know, a for fun thing throughout my life, I'm sure. But I didn't discover that more involved thing until StarCraft community, which is very involved, and even still to this day. And I ended up starting like a website, learningsc2.com, which still exists. It's very outdated. But I wrote articles and blog posts and things like that just on my journey of like going from bronze to diamond, which was the highest at the time. Wouldn't say I was like a competitive player or anything, but just going through that journey and documenting that and sharing what I learned, just having that outlet as well as like developing writing skills and stuff like that, which I ended up quite liking. I did a lot of kind of online SEO writing, search engine writing about all sorts of various things as a ghostwriter at the time to just try and, you know, pay for things as I explored that addiction. And that was not very fun. I don't recommend it. I was writing about things like garage door openers, and who knows what else. I can't even remember now. It's a blur. But my partner, Amy, my delightful partner, suggested that I try YouTube, and I said, no, that's a terrible idea. I don't think I'd be into that. Video format, I'm a writer, I said while pushing my glasses up my face. Yes. I don't even know if I was wearing glasses then, but I actually did give it a try, and I tasted something there in terms of like putting out a piece of content and having those comments come in and reacting and responding to those comments and having an impact on people and their enjoyment of the game in particular. And that awakened something in me. And then on the like lifestyle side of things, like I was like, oh wow, this video made $10. If I did 100 videos like that, or did videos that were 100 times better and 10, and then another 100 of those, I might actually be able to earn a living with this. So I said about the journey of scaling up, which I actually like documented on a second channel and stuff at the time. And that led into playing Diablo 3 at some point as I started to drop off of StarCraft. And Path of Exile at the time, which was like a finding. I found Path of Exile as like a way to eagerly await the Diablo 3 beta. I saw there was this closed beta, so I was like, ooh, and there was this timer. So I tried to get in with my buddy at the time. We were trying to get in, and we didn't get in. They wouldn't let me in. I wasn't allowed to play Path of Exile until after I played Diablo 3, after that had already been out for a while. But I did get in just when they added Varl, the final boss of Act 2, in the closed beta. Got myself a bronze Kiwi and bought my way in. Had to do it the hard way. But obviously took to that and the limitless potential for time and things to talk about. There's just so many things to talk about with Path of Exile. That's what I like doing. So it gave me no shortage of that throughout the years. And that whole thing about comments in particular really appealed to me, like having that interactive side of things over the content that I made.
So that back and forth is what you're saying.
Yeah, I always have religiously read my YouTube comments and responded to them. Too much, probably, especially nowadays, given how many there are. But substantially more than there was back in those days. But I craved them. I still can't help myself. I still read and respond to many of them. I tried the live streaming thing from my house at the time, but we had terrible internet, as did most of Australia. So I did, like, my first ever live stream was it was a stream of the Path of Exile passive tree that they had put out at one point, and it was maybe in 140p. I could count the pixels on my hands. It was probably about 10 FPS. I was blurry and the audio was scuffed, but I couldn't get enough, so I moved across the country to get somewhere with better internet, and that started the live streaming, which was 10 years ago at this point. I've crossed the 10-year threshold.
Congratulations.
Yeah, it's been wild. So the second part two of my life story, since I think you did mention, was the how did I kind of like get more involved with Grinding Gear Games then? Yeah.
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 Do tell. So, this is super interesting.
Yeah, my partner and I were like, maybe 2-3 years into the Path of Exile journey. And my partner and I basically just said, why don't we just go to New Zealand? We just pay our own way there, go there, and we'll say, look, we're coming to New Zealand. We're going to be in the area. We're just going to, like, stand outside your offices. If you want to let us in, feel free to let us in. And they're like, oh, I don't know. I don't know about this new media thing, as everyone was saying at the time. What if you guys leak stuff? We don't know if we can trust you. Eventually, I convinced them, and they said, all right, if you sign an NDA, which that was the only it was the only NDA I ever signed with them, if I recall correctly, was that first one. Because after that point, we made some great content there. We made some great friends there. It was just a really fun time. I kind of just spent that early trip was just, I just spent like a week in the office just hanging out, playing things, testing stuff, talking to developers, almost just like acting like I was an employee who didn't have to work particularly hard. Just kind of just absorbing that like culture and how they did things. And it was a fascinating experience. And I just did some little interviews and bits and pieces of content, and I think they liked what they saw, and they liked how I carried myself, and they liked that I didn't leak anything. So I created like a, just that initiative and that like trustworthiness, I think, really sold it. I just kept building on that over the years by doing similar things, to the point where, you know, they were willing to have me host things at ExileCon and do race casting and run the Q&A for them, be the interviewer guy, the community rep, the person representing the community, you know, not rather than the person representing the company. At some point, I did get a job offer with them. They're like, well, you're obviously doing a decent job of this. Why don't you just come work for the, why don't you just come work for us? But and I did have a serious think about that, because that's obviously an amazing offer. It probably would have been a fantastic thing to do. But I liked the content creation too much. I liked too much of that. Yeah, so I had to stick with that journey, even though at the time it wasn't very, like, reliable.
You kind of imagined yourself doing both at the same time?
No, I don't think you can. I've seen people try to go that route. where, I mean, I guess I don't know the full field of that. Like, maybe some, you know, that's, maybe that is entirely doable, but I feel like if you have a fulfilling career at a company, you're probably not gonna, you know, go as deep into what you would might do on the content creation side of things as to what I've done, which was to really immerse myself in that, you know. Yeah, at least for myself. But yeah, I don't regret my decision, but I'm sure I wouldn't have the other way around either.
Do you think, like, in some small part, there might be like, you know, once it becomes a job, it becomes something different? Like,
I mean, that's always a thing, but at the same time, that's the thing for what I do now, right? making gaming a job is, you know, people say, you know, that's a good way to take the fun out of it. It certainly can be. You don't necessarily want to make all your hobbies a job. And I've learned that, like, not necessarily to make all of the hobbies that I have into content, because that's not always a good way to enhance my enjoyment of them. Though, for the most part, I do tend to enjoy things more when I get to share them with more people and make content about them. So it kind of works well for me, but everyone's a bit different with that. Yeah.
One thread that I picked up on in that story was that it was a really organic way of you and GGG coming together. It wasn't like GGG was scheming in the background somewhere, like, how do we market our game and get closer to the community? It was more like you
just
saw a need, or like a wanted to get deeper into what you're doing. Well,
in one sense, it wasn't very organic because we forced it. We basically were like, we're coming. You can let us in if you want. Otherwise, we're just going to stand outside and film some vlogs out the front of your office or something. But no, I think you're right, though. I think it is a pretty organic thing. I mean, they were a small indie company at the time. They maybe had like 20, 30 people then. And they didn't know, you know, if it was a good idea to let a YouTuber in, to let a Twitch streamer in. Yeah, it just developed slowly over time, right? And we've tried more and more different things. So, you know, we hosted some live streams from me being at home. More recently, we've done the thing where I go out there and do the in-person thing, which looks even better. And they've, like, progressed that as they go. You know, they just set up a studio to film this sort of content in. So they're taking it more and more seriously and trying to make it nicer and nicer for everyone. Very cool. It's been such a cool process to see, just to, like, be part of that over the last, like, better part of a decade. See that growth.
I think there's your story reminds me a lot of what we saw with, like, early Blizzard, like Blizzard mm-hmm. North. At one point, and this was Blizzard Irvine too. There were people who would go outside and scope in on Blizzard to see what was happening, to see what the progression was for certain games, like how many cars are in the parking lot, and like, oh, there's a bunch there. They must be working, so we know the game's it's getting ready.
Nope, they must be pulling overtime. He was in there for 2 hours longer than usual.
But you've just taken that one step further. Like, hey, I'm outside watching. You may as well let me in, and we'll turn it into something. And it's worked out really well.
You sit out in the snow, freezing until they bring you a blanket and let you inside.
Snowy in New Zealand.
It doesn't get too snowy in Australia. Maybe a bit more in New Zealand.
I'm like, I was out there during your winter, and I was surfing in the water. I'm like, it can't be that bad. But
I don't think it's the snow where I've lived.
My concept of cold is very different than yours.
I did have one thing also, because listening to sort of the origin of when you started on the content creation side, it seemed like you naturally led into the helping other people in the community side of things, with like making the StarCraft website and just like a knowledge sharing aspect. And now we've seen, you know, how you've created guides and things like that over the years for Path of Exile. And like, it feels like your niche is about like welcoming people in and giving them sort of that insight into like how they can become better at playing the game. Was that just something that naturally, were you thinking about education or any of that stuff in like your, you know, life before content creation, or is that just a natural thing that grew up with your content?
I do wonder what the origin of that is, because I certainly understand that in myself now very much, that my favorite content to make is the thing that helps someone like learn to do something better or to enjoy something more in particular. So I very much love that teaching and that learning aspect. I love to like learn something new and then like really break it down and then explain it in a way that's super easy for people to understand. That whole process to me is really satisfying. I don't know. And you're right. I effectively started that website was learning StarCraft. It was about that learning process and sharing that so that other people could follow that. And I wonder, like, really just a theory, because I really don't know how that came about. A theory would be that I am an older brother of a lot of younger siblings, and they liked watching me play games. And I liked explaining the games and telling them about. I probably liked a little rush of, being knowledgeable and being good at the game, and then admiring me in some way and teaching them, how the game worked or a better way to do something. So I think a lot of non-multiplayer gaming made multiplayer through that classic sibling thing of, you sit behind me and watch, and, say some things and I'll tell you things. That kind of
thing. Twitch before Twitch.
Yeah, I mean, that's effectively what the Twitch is the evolution of, isn't it? It's the watching your older brother or sister or whatever play a game and commentating with them and then commentating. It's that's my best guess. I think it probably comes from there because I have five younger siblings spread out over a pretty large amount of time. And I think I enjoyed kind of interacting with all of them about that sort of stuff quite a lot.
Very cool.
That is awesome.
It's a good guess.
So as we transition, you've been making content about Path of Exile 1 for years. Several years ago, we start hearing about Path of Exile 2 as, this offshoot where we're going to start upgrading. It's going to be, you're going to be able to play POE 1 and POE 2 simultaneously, and then it starts to evolve. It starts to change. It becomes its own beast. It becomes this new game. So after all these years, you finally get to play Path of Exile 2. I shared on Kind of Funny 2 weeks ago when for the press event, we got to go out to LA and play. They had Acts 1, 2, and 3. I don't think anybody got to Act 3. I got through Act 1, and I don't know how far of Act 2. What was it like for you to get hands-on and play it after these years? What was it like to jump into something new yet familiar?
So somewhat interesting answer I can kind of give you on reflection is that my first time playing it must have been at the original ExileCon. So quite some time ago in the early days, after it had just started to evolve into a bit more enough to make an ExileCon about, but, not necessarily evolved into the whole thing that it is now. And it was my first hands-on experience with probably was not that good, to be honest. it was very awkward for a number of reasons. Ultimately, it's not a game that demos very well in a short time frame. You're on a character that you didn't make, that you didn't go through the process of learning and creating. You have unfamiliar control bindings. You're in a new environment on a new PC. And then it was a very early version of the game that was very difficult and probably a bit poorly tuned. And I think myself and a lot of people have experienced a lot of issues that have since been improved on dramatically over the years. Like, they've come a long way there. Like, it was then, I think, that first experience was like, this is very cool and very ambitious and very exciting evolution for Path of Exile 1 to make Path of Exile 1 a bit better. That's what it was then. I was like, wow, this looks way better. Like, the graphics and the visuals and, that aspect of it, the presentation of the game was improving dramatically. And that was what it was, effectively. It was a re-rig of the character models and a new campaign. So thus, a refreshed presentation of Path of Exile 1. And that's what it was going to be. But it has since evolved a lot more. And my most recent hands-on was just a couple of weeks ago in New Zealand for the recent reveal Q&A. And such a huge difference. It's now legitimately fun. That's the real biggest thing. Because it wasn't, that first one I played wasn't fun. I was very impressed with various things. And I was very excited for the future. But it wasn't fun. I didn't have fun playing it then. I probably did what I usually do, which is where I tried to find the fun, and I focused on talking about those things that I thought that were really cool. But, looking back on it, I don't think it was very fun then. But now, It's a whole new game. It's a whole separate game. It's far more than just a refresh of the aesthetics of Path of Exile 1. It's funny how it's evolved from new character models in a campaign into a full new game. But I think Jonathan and several others, he said recently in an interview that he's just he was never happy with Path of Exile 1. And right. He probably could never be happy with it. And he wants to, as his final act in life, at least make his perfect game. I think that probably goes for a lot of them. So, yes, the recent one, recent hands-on, very fun. Big comparison, big difference.
It is interesting to hear you take that tact of, like, analyzing the fun as sort of the thing that stuck out between those iterations for you from, like, the very, you know, initial outset to now. Because at a high level, I feel like that is game development in a nutshell, right? Like, it's all just math and spreadsheets and, you know, chores at the end of the day. And you just have to find a way to make that fun that someone will give you money and, like, log into your thing and be like, yes, I want to do these chores. And you've presented them to me in an interesting, exciting way that helps me feel like I fulfill some fantasy that I can't get in my real life or whatever, right?
You can have the greatest numbers. You can have the most interesting, like, mechanics, the most conceptually brilliant designs, and the most beautiful graphics. But you do have to, at the end of the day, make sure that it's fun. 100%. And that can finding that fun can be really difficult. It can be easy to lose sight of as well. But you know, it's when did it become fun for me is what I'm kind of thinking of right now. So we had an LA hands-on. It was the first LA hands-on that I went to. And I would say at that point, it still was a far cry from fun. I had a bit more fun than I did with my initial hands-on because I had a bit more time with it and a time to kind of work through some of the issues that it had. But ultimately, it still wasn't very fun. And there was a lot of people who had that experience, I think. But then I several months ago at the start of the recent Settlers League, I went around to New Zealand again. And I played and did a deep dive on Melee. I played a bunch of Warrior and a bunch of Monk. Which was me really putting the game through its paces because I said, like, they can make Melee fun, they can make anything fun. Melee is really hard to get right. You are up close and personal with every problem the game has. That's what Melee is. You're in Melee range of all the game's issues. And it was so fun. Like, probably the most fun physical gameplay experience I've ever had outside of maybe some of my best top Path of Exile 1 build experiences. So, but it was doing that while being way more engaging. And that was just like in the early acts, right? Ultimately. Right. So that's when I started to get really excited. That was that 5 months ago or something. I was like, yes, they are finally getting it.
They are
finally getting it together.
All right. So for me, I haven't gotten to touch Path of Exile 2 in any format yet. So this is why Friday to me is like the most exciting day. Circled on the calendar like a million times.
Ready to go. You can see for yourself finally. All right. Yeah. So exciting.
So I've been listening to, you know, people, all the interviews and content pieces that are starting to come out now, talking to Xanth, listening to what you're saying, and I'm trying to, like, put these pieces together because I think one thing that is very hard to convey in words is, like, moment-to-moment gameplay combat feel, right? And so much of that seems to be the crux of what people are kind of hinging their opinions on PoE2 on right now, is that that is what they have revolutionized from 1 to 2.
Yeah, and it can be, you're right, it's so hard to communicate because you can play a little slice of gameplay in Path of Exile 2 and you'll be like, wow, that was like, let's say, for example, it's a boss fight. And every moment of that boss fight, you're like thinking about your next move, you're looking at what the boss is doing, you're reacting, you're just barely dodging a thing. It's like, it was super intense, super exciting. It felt so fast paced. And then someone else watches the footage and they go, oh, it looks kind of slow. It was a bit of a long boss fight. Like, oh, that was not my experience actually playing it, right? I mean, that's just that disconnect between all of the thought processes that go into playing a game versus, you know, just watching someone else play. That's why it's so easy to notice your favorite streamer miss things all the time. And you're like, how did they miss that? It was so obvious to me. Because your brain is not being taxed in the same way as ultimately, right? So it is difficult to communicate, especially when you're coming from the legacy of Path of Exile 1, which, again, Path of Exile 1 now does look very fast and exciting, and is very fast and exciting, so it's obviously very different, ultimately, and boss fights can look slow, they can look long.
Let's talk boss fights, since you brought it up.
Sure, I love boss fights.
We won't spoil any of them, but let's just talk about them, and I guess in the general capacity. Let's talk that you got hands-on a little while ago. Did you clear through Act 1?
Yes. So in this most recent trip, I cleared through Act 1, and I would say 2/3 to 3/4, I would guess, of Act 2. So not to the final boss of Act 2, maybe a few areas shy of that. And that was, I'm not sure exactly the exact hours, but it was maybe over the course of 8 or 9 hours. So like really pacing myself and exploring and messing with my hotkeys and really thinking about the character I was playing and all that, which was really important to my experience, I think.
Little tangent, let's come back. You've got the character selection screen there. What did you go with?
I played Mercenary on my most recent trip, and I wanted to do something very different to what I did the previous trip, which is where I deep-focused melee with Warrior and Monk, Monk in particular. So I was like, I want to do the complete opposite. But Mercenary is very fascinating to me, and I needed to see just how far they'd gone with it, because it is a very fundamentally different playstyle to what exists currently. And I think it's almost like how summoners are very fundamentally different to play to any other class, any other playstyle. Mercenary is your damage happens instantly because you click a button and the crossbow bolt fires, right? And then you reload, or you reload before the fight. You spend your mana and you reload rather than when you use the skill. All of these little things start to come together to make a very different gameplay experience. You have one button for the most part, apart from some utility skills and things like that. You have one button that does your damage. You have the fire button. It's shoot, right? You pull the trigger. That's how crossbow works, right? You pull the trigger. You don't push like 1, 2, 3, 4 for different abilities, but you have ammo that you can preload before the battle that you then swap between with those buttons if you want to. So you prepare before a fight. Ooh. It's very preparation focused. I imagine it like kind of like a tinkerer, weapon a master, kind of monster hunter style character. A bit like Geralt or something, I guess, how he's got these various tinctures and things that he prepares before the fight. He knows what he's going up to face, and you know, he applies the oil to his weapon or whatever. prepares a spell, that sort of thing. It's a bit like the Mercenary, which is a very different playstyle to me. It works very well in Path of Exile 2 with monsters that are scary and zones that are scary, and you're getting immersed in that. The idea that you're like preparing for that next fight feels very cool. And then if you prepare poorly, you know, then you've got interesting questions to try and answer. What do I do now? I'm surrounded by werewolves. I have used all my ammo. I forgot to load my shotgun shells. I have a flashbang. Let's use that. I'll blind myself. That's okay. Probably worth it. Yeah, very different, very fun experience.
You're a braver man than I. I rolled a mercenary right out the gate. And I was like, I need more time to think of how this works. I'm going to default to a witch that I know. And that's what I rolled my time.
A lot of people had that same experience. And even me, like first 20, 30 minutes, I was like, this is pretty weird and awkward. I was like, and yeah, it took a minute to be fun. Like, I was super interested, and I went into it with the mindset that I would be solving that, like that I would be figuring that out, which helped. But I did see people who kind of just like, you know, clicked it without really thinking about that, and then be like, oh, I think this is a bit much for what I want right now. I might play something I get. You know, so many people I saw that did that exact same thing. Yeah, because it is very different, and you find yourself like running into enemies very early game. You don't have as many tools at your disposal. You don't have that many ammo types to preload. So getting used to that new play style and dealing with that reloading system in that very early slice of gameplay. And I thought, I was worried when I finished my session, because I was like, that might be a big hurdle for people. And then on reflection, I went back and I looked at the footage and stuff. I was like, oh, that was only 20 minutes that period lasted for. That was solved, like, that started to be solved in the second zone I went to, and was like almost a non-issue by the third. Because at that point, I had already gained like 2-3 more skills, and I had started to get comfortable with the concept of it. So it changes a lot at that point. Yeah, and then late game, I've got a belt with 3 different types of grenades on it, and I've got 4 different types of preloaded magazines of ammo. One of them has 70 rounds in it. The other one's a shotgun shell that's double barrel, and this one freezes them. And then it changes from that kind of initial awkwardness into, I have all of these tools. Let's use this one in this situation and this one in this situation. I'm going to engage with the flashbang. I'm going to freeze that thing. I'm going to shatter it with this one. I'm going to lead in with some gas grenades before I even start the fight, so that then the explosive I throw halfway through the fight blows them up. Yeah. It's pretty cool.
Yeah, it almost like transforms itself from, like, you know, the initial outset, you're like, am I prepared, to I am prepared. Like, I have everything ready.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's interesting to hear you guys talk about Mercenary, because that is the class that I want to play at the outset of early access.
Solid choice.
Since Huntress isn't there, Huntress would be the top choice.
Yeah, I love Spears.
Yes. And it's so funny to hear that connection between, like, you know, there, it's a very unique playstyle, and that's what attracts me to it. But that could turn some people off and make them want to go to something they're familiar with.
Yeah.
When I look in the community, though, we have multiple choices that players can go back to that are sort of like POE 1 classes, right? Which is like Witch and Ranger. But Ranger is at, like, the bottom of everyone's pie chart of, like, hey, which class do you think you're going to start?
Yeah, it's funny, too.
Often at the top.
Yeah, it's funny. That I'd noted that as well, that not many people talking about Ranger. It looks good. It just looks the most similar to Path of Exile 1 out of anything. So there's definitely an element of it being, you know, just, it's so familiar already. Oh, I can play that later. I already kind of know what that's like, even though it is ultimately still going to be very different. I mean, for one, you can ride around on the back of a rower while shooting things with a bow while moving. So it's got to be a little different, but... But it's not as different as a Mercenary, or even what they've done with summoners has changed them a lot. So I think a lot of summoner players are very excited to explore that, and a lot of players who wanted to be summoner players are also excited to explore that. But, you know, it was too obtuse in Path of Exile 1, so they couldn't get their head around it. It makes a lot more sense here.
But yeah, as you're talking about summoners, as I was, I started with a witch. And my goal was to go minions, and I ended up defaulting to Essence Drain Contagion because it just started working, and I had such a limited time. I wanted to get as much as I could. But playing with minions, the customizable army, like, this isn't just a few skeletons, but then, hey, do you want to balance some spirit and bring in some mages? You want to balance a little spirit, maybe bring in a sniper? You want to balance a spirit and bring in some more stuff? Like, that was so cool. That, like,
did you find yourself tinkering over time with that?
Absolutely. Like, I was messing with stuff left and right, and there was, you know, then suddenly there goes another 30 minutes of, like, oh crap, I've literally just been messing with the amount of skeletons I have.
I've been in the same zone for 30 minutes, but I didn't even realize.
Right. I should go back and do something else. I'd shared before on a different podcast that, like, during this time I literally skipped lunch because I was just so immersed with my play. Like, I will eat later. I know I will eat later. I'm not going to play Path of Exile tomorrow, so I need to get this all in.
I was the same at those LA events when they, like, have the, you know, lunch service tables. I was like, why is anyone eating? What the? I did not stop to eat lunch. No way. I, like, grabbed some leftovers before I left.
We're of like mind in that regard, which is good. I mean, you got to take advantage of all the Path of Exile 2 that you absolutely can. So we're kind of dancing around it as we're getting onto the precipice of early access starting on Friday. What are you going to start with?
Yeah, it's been a really hard choice, because while I just spent ages gushing about Mercenary, I played Monk just before that, and it was maybe one of the most interesting and best designed melee experiences I've ever had in an action RPG, which is a big, 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 big leap forwards for Path of Exile, because it's an area it struggled. It's an area the genre has struggled, really. Monk kind of blew me away. I do ultimately think I'm going to start with Mercenary and do some Grenadier action. Like, I'm pretty excited to explore that. Explosions are a big argument in favor of Mercenary. I do like grenades and shotgun blasts and things like that. And even though, like, it's like gun class seems a little at odds with the vibe of Path of Exile, I actually felt completely opposite playing it. Because I did initially think that. I was like, oh my god, they literally made gun sounds, and they keep calling it the devs keep calling it a gun in Q&A. And I'm like, this is a little bit concerning vibe wise. But actually playing it, I was like, oh, I'm Van Helsing. You know, oh, I'm like, I'm a monster hunter. That's actually so cool. I love that. I love that vibe. It actually fit very well. So there's that. I do think about like, oh, what's the thing I want to most experience that in? And I don't know, crawling through the woods with the werewolves charging at me and, you know, just skewering them with a crossbow bolt, blowing them away with flashbangs, that sort of thing. Sounds pretty satisfying to me. And I think the deciding factor was I posted this recent video of the mercenary that I did, and people are losing their minds at it. So I'm like, yeah, I should play that and show them some more. Like, let's us and me and my community, is like, that's always a big motivator. Is like, if my community is really excited about something, I'm gonna get more excited about it. I can't help myself, because they're like, they're asking about it, they're telling me things about it, they're telling me their theories, they're telling me how they're gonna build it, and I'm like, oh well, I gotta go on that journey with them. So I think we'll start there. The real answer is I'm going to play all the things.
Same.
Someone's on the bottom of my list. Not because I think it's the worst, but actually because I think it's too much. It's too different. It's a whole can of worms I want to open after I've played the kind of more normal gameplay experiences, I guess. Even though it's so much more approachable now. But I might leave that one for last.
I wonder, because this will be like our first pass at the game, when you're picking that very first class to experience, you know, the acts we haven't played yet, bosses we haven't encountered yet, Do you think it will be easier to learn also being ranged? Because that's usually an advantage, right? You can sort of see telegraphs coming better when you're not like on top of the boss in melee.
Yeah, the range melee thing is always super interesting, because like I posted all this monk footage and it was like amazing. I had this in particular, I showed many times this footage of me just completely dismantling a boss and feeling like an absolute god on the monk, just because of the way I was like naturally moving with the skills and like flickering in and out and dodging all of these things seamlessly in this like one fluid, very monk-like experience of just dismantling this boss. And I was like, that I lived the monk fantasy at that moment. It felt so good. And then I post some mercenary footage of me fighting a boss, and people are like, looks like melee gets the raw end of the deal again. It's like, no matter what, people are going to say that. So it doesn't really matter the reality ultimately. Range is probably easier to learn mechanics on, and boss mechanics, and to kind of test the waters against enemies that you're not very familiar with. Melee, certainly more so than ever before, has the tools to deal with all that stuff, though. And there are advantages to be melee. In fact, on your ranged characters, my advice against most bosses is to get close to them, to get into melee with them, because it's simple geometry, which I didn't pay attention to in school but had to learn when I started playing action RPGs, is that the closer you are to the point of origin of a cone-style attack, or a beam, or almost anything, the less far you have to move to avoid it. You can take one step to dodge an attack versus having to take 10 steps. So yeah, you often nearly always want to be close to a boss. Obviously, things are a little bit more complicated than that a lot of the time, but it fundamentally remains true. You can go a few ways with it, right? Like you can do a warrior and just build really defensively, big chunky boy, and have that experience. Like, that's going to work too, just fine as a starter. Yeah, or you can, you know, take things carefully at range. And I think as long as you have that mindset of, like, engaging carefully, especially on the mercenary, then that works very well with ranged.
So, I mean, one, you talk about, like, going through your list of how you're going to approach it. The general, like, what we've heard from GGG is they want early access to be around 6 months, right? Minimum 6 months, no longer than a year.
Yeah, that was the plan.
You think you even are gonna, even with just six classes, have enough time to play them all? The possibilities seem too vast.
Well, how much lunch are you eating? You can, yes, none ever. You cannot keep up with all of the possible things to play in Path of Exile. That's part of the beauty of it. If you do have issue with that fact, you'll never be at ease with it potentially. But Yeah, because like ultimately the content that gets added to the game is faster than what you can consume. I love that. I love that. The list of things I haven't been able to try in Path of Exile just keeps getting bigger and bigger and bigger. And I'll never work through that backlog, just like I'll never work through my Steam backlog of games I have to play. Same thing.
You can't play anything else because there's always more Path of Exile.
I have a big period of my life where, like, maybe 5 years where I just, people are like, did you play this game? I was like, oh, did it come out, you know, in the first 5 years of me playing Path of Exile 1? Then no, probably not. I just have like a black hole in my gaming history. I'm much more able to try a bunch of different indie games and stuff these days. I do get out there a bit more now, but yeah, that was like that for a while. Probably gonna happen again.
And there it goes. You know, as we're talking about, like, Path of Exile 2 coming out on the 6th, it's getting a lot of buzz. This is very different than Path of Exile 1. This is very different than when they went from Act 6, was it War for the Atlas? When they added 6 new acts, like, this is bigger, which means there's a bunch of new eyes and new players coming in. How much more approachable do you think Path of Exile 2 is than Path of Exile 1?
Yeah, that's the one of the big discussion points I've been like just bringing up constantly to people is this idea of difficulty versus accessibility. Path of Exile 2 is so much more accessible than Path of Exile 1, even though the moment-to-moment gameplay might look and actually be a bit more difficult. And that's because they've moved like some of the difficulty away from it just being obtuse and confusing and overwhelming into gameplay, which is a far better place for difficulty to be for most people. I mean, some of us revel in the difficulty of, you know, well, here's this crazy thing you have to learn in order to even, you know, have a chance. Some of us love that. I kind of love that. But probably the better way to go, definitely the better way to go, is to have that difficulty be through actual engaging gameplay, not in a third-party tool that you've, you know, created to decipher the game. So it's a massive difference in many, many, many ways. The ability to change gear more fluidly is a really big one. The skill gem system changes, super fundamental. That was like kind of one of the first major things that then went on to make it a second game, was when they decided that that was the thing that they needed to do. So that's the idea of that gear lock-in, right? So in Path of Exile 1, you're playing through the campaign, you have your main skill linked to several support gems in this amazing gem system that they created, and it's really cool. That customization is really cool, and that piece of gear is garbage, and you can't change it. Because to change it is a whole process that is just too much of a headache for most people to deal with, and that was a huge bounce point for a lot of people. Even if it wasn't just like one instance of that, it was something that ground you down over time. So that is completely solved. You can change gems and skills and supports and stuff just constantly and fluidly and in whatever detail you want without any disruption to your gearing. You find, and I mean, fundamentally it means you find cool items and you put them on your character. It sounds so simple, but it's so core, right? It's so fundamentally an important thing to be able to constantly make cool upgrades and changes to your character and play with that gearing puzzle. And then there's many, many other things that they've done that are deeper and much more subtle than that. One of my favorites to mention is this, how they're approaching difficulty between experienced players versus new players. So you want to make the game as accessible as possible for a new player, literally someone you pull off the street who's never played a video game before, right? Pretty hard for Path of Exile to do that. That's challenging. So how do you do that without ruining the game for the veterans? You can't ruin the game for the veterans for a game like Path of Exile. It's too important, right? You have to preserve that. Mm-hmm. So and what they've done is really brilliant. They lean into what action RPGs kind of naturally do, where a player who's struggling over levels, they overgear, they explore more, they kill more things. Whereas a player who's very experienced doesn't need to do that. They know exactly what they need to be able to kill that next boss. So they can do it with and this is the term, right? Min-maxing. They can min-max. They can do the minimum they need to do to get through that so they can do the maximum amount of content, get to endgame and blast away. So they lent into that by creating these very clever systems of like exploration and hidden events and catch up mechanics and like chests tucked away down in dead ends that an experienced player would never go down because they know how to avoid it, or they don't need to go and do all that exploration, and they're blasting through. But that, you know, that newer player, that person who's struggling, or even the experienced player when they have a moment where they struggle, right? Because that happens too. They go and explore. They take advantage of those things. They get an extra gem. They get an extra piece of currency that, you know, brings them up a little bit, gives them a little kick. it's very, very cool.
Yeah, I think, I mean, obviously, like 10 years of working on one project and being able to take all of the learnings of, you know, what were the sore points or the things that, because you're ingrained in that system, you just can't, you know, like you were saying at the outset of the conversation, you know, Jonathan has these things that he wishes he could go back and fix for PoE1 to make it that perfect game, but it's ingrained in the system. And so, you know, it's getting this fresh sort of platform with PoE2 to not make those mistakes initially, right? And start from a even better starting point. Like some of the things that I think even go understated in terms of that accessibility are like the ability to have an attribute node be what you need it to be at the moment, right? You can pick strength, you can pick int, and you don't get locked out of like, oh, I have a skill gem and I really want to use it. I think it's going to be cool for my build, but like, where do I get the int? And I haven't leveled up to get to this next, you know, passive or whatever. Even stuff like that, like I think just helps unlock a lot of what could feel like mistakes or traps for newer players. I wonder though, you know, this is my challenge to seeing what happens on Friday and beyond, is if there will be new points. Like we've ironed out some of the full trappings and things, but like what, like for instance, Xanth and I were talking a few days ago, like what happens if a player just makes bad choices with their uncut skill gems and they aren't getting, you know, new ones in time to like fix their build or pick a better skill gem or something like that. Like, is that a moment where they
answer
just
that question? So the uncut gems, they have made quite a bit more common. They have balanced it and tuned it to the point where you have enough of them to be able to get new skills to solve any problems you may be having, but you don't have enough to level up every skill to the maximum level that you currently have. So that creates this naturally cascading system where you get an uncut and you're like, oh, finally I can create that skill that I need because I keep getting swarmed by these little bugs. So I'm going to get this thing that explodes them really quickly. that's going to save me. Or I'm going to get this thing that freezes them, right? I'm going to get this totem that distracts them or whatever. You now have a tool to solve that problem. And then, you'll do that. You'll start blowing up those. One of those packs will drop you another one. And then you're like, oh, okay, well, actually, I don't have any major problems right now. So now I can get power. So then you upgrade your main skill, your most impactful skill, or maybe a less impactful skill that you've let languish for a long time. It can finally do a catch up, which is really satisfying, by the way. Like you have that moment where that skill that I left at level one for ages because the level ups weren't that impactful, I all of a sudden do 5 level ups on it and it's bam, massive power spike on it. I'm like, oh, that feels so good. I did that with Herald of Ice. I left it for a long time because I was focusing on the main skills. I was unlocking new skills. And then, you know, I got that extra gem. I hadn't upgraded everything, but I'm like, you know what? I've left that for a very long time. Let's upgrade it. All of a sudden, ice explosions, blowing up everything. Yeah.
so good.
So I've done a really good job of that. But I am an experienced player who's thinking about that concept of how to spend them. So I am sure that there will be some new players maybe who like spend them a little bit unwisely and thus will have a little bit of a trouble with that. That's where that catch-up mechanic comes in, right? Because the uncut gems drop a lot more from things like the special encounters that they craft that are hidden around the maps and the rare chests. Those drop uncut gems and uncut supports much more commonly. So that catches them up if they're having that problem. So it's like that's another like angle that that's solving that through. It's pretty clever.
Yeah, that intentionality of like the gameplay exploration will be what gets you where you need to go. And like you said, you know, the min-maxers don't need it, but the players that it will serve are actively going to find those solutions.
Yeah, but to your original point though, like for sure there will be new pain points, right? There's gonna have to be. Like I do wonder like how many new players coming to Path of Exile for the first time might have issue discovering like how do you actually trade gear? Wait, anyone? How do you do that? It's not immediately obvious in game. Thankfully, there's the currency exchange now. That will be a thing that they can find and learn and interact with through game. But like, they want to sell a cool pair of boots they found. There's going to be a little hurdle they have to jump over to figure out how to do that. So I'll be interested to see if they have done anything to address that or will do anything to address that, because that might be something they need to look at. And there'll be other examples for sure. Like, I think maybe they've done this system with the ascending to get your ascendancy class, the trials, where you can make choices, but it's definitely confusing as to how that works, I think, and to how you can make choices and what choices can you actually make, and do you actually have a choice? So I think maybe some people are going to be a little confused with that, where they're like, wait, I just did the second trial, why didn't I ascend? It's like, oh, you did it at the same difficulty you did the first one. I think there's going to be some confusion there. So there'll definitely be some things for them to work out throughout the early access.
Now, we danced around bosses just a little bit.
Yeah, yeah.
Do you think the bosses themselves might be a pain point for somebody, you know, who's making a transition? I would argue the bosses that I encountered in my playtest were difficult, but fair. They're difficult but fair. Much equatable to a Dark Souls, where I was always aware of the mistake that I made that I could then try to fix and then would make again and then would try to fix again for several times. I got better. I did beat them. But do you think that might be a bouncing off point for some? I'm not saying
that's a super interesting,
but
yeah, I mean they've done a lot of thought to this, because I know that for a fact they've done like that sort of stuff where you pull randoms off streets and, you know, film their facial reactions and their mouth ticks as they play the game, that sort of stuff. They've been doing some of that stuff because they wanted to like figure out some of these things. You know, where are these points that people like really struggle with? But the bosses and that in particular, that question is super interesting because there's a few factors that go into that. So sometimes you actually have non-Path of Exile players playing Path of Exile and having an easier time with that because they're naturally exploring more, over-leveling, over-gearing. And the bosses are tuned in a way that like a reasonably experienced Path of Exile 1 player who has been keeping up with the gear, keeping up with their level, is maybe like only slightly over-leveled, will have like a very good, like will have the tools to be able to defeat a boss the first time they encounter them, but probably won't. They'll probably do it the second time because they'll die to something. That's kind of where it feels like it's at for me. But you will have new players who go through and one-shot some of the bosses, I think, because they're over-prepared just by virtue of the way they play. But an issue has been identified that they've like done some pretty clever things to fix, actually. I don't know if this ever came up at any point. But so an issue that sometimes occurs is it depends on the player's history of what sort of games they play. And I found when I played Souls-like games, bosses to be more difficult to overcome if I really felt like I wasn't powerful enough, because I wasn't sure how to go get more power to do that in Souls games. It's not as evident. Whereas in an action RPG, you know, you can always go kill more monsters, get a couple more levels, get gear. It's very granular, that upgrading that you can do, and it's very obvious how to go do that to someone who's played those games before. Some people haven't. They've played other games where that's not a thing. They play games like, I don't know, Sonic or whatever, where you just keep fighting the boss until you get it, you know, or you run out of lives. That's their gameplay experience. So whether they go and do other things to get more powerful if they are unable to kill the boss currently depends on their gaming history, and that's an interesting problem to solve. Something that they did, which seems disconnected but super important, is they added to the map around waypoints, like the actual world map that you look at, little symbols that say that there's like a treasure thing here that you didn't get. There's like a little side quest thing here. There's a hidden thing here that was revealed when you got the waypoint. Various different conditions reveal these things in zones that you've been to or are currently in. And that gives people a very like tangible thing to go shoot for. It's like, oh, I'm really struggling with this, but I'm going to do something else for a minute. Like, what's that? There's a little baggie on the map there with a dollar sign on it. Maybe I'll go check that out. And they said that had a big impact. Like, they did that and they did some more tests. And apparently that's like got more people to go get more powerful to then come back and fight the boss. It's interesting how it's like seemingly disconnected, but
yeah.
I must have missed that during my playtest because I was apparently akin to the Sonic player where like I'm just going to keep throwing myself at this Act 1 boss. Because
you get that, yeah.
It's a me thing. I need to not roll so much and pay attention.
Yeah,
that sounds great.
I think that was a very new addition. Like, I know when I was playing it that it was done throughout Act 1, but not fully done in Act 2. So I don't think they even started on Act 3. So apparently it's taking a while to go through and, like, document all these secret things they added to, like, be able to put on the map like that. Yeah, so that might not have even been in your build if it was slightly earlier.
I guess when I think about, like,
that's the beat there.
When I think about, like, a traditional game, right, like an MMO or something, to me it's almost like those quest markers around, you know, the different zones and stuff that are kind of like points of interest. Like, hey, there's something here that you can, you know, discover, and it might lead you to that upgrade, you know, some resources that you can then, you know, getting, because we've been talking also about just gear, but, like, the, I think, impact that will be felt in them allowing more of the crafting stuff to drop, like exalts and things like that, I think it's also going to be a really nice on-ramp for those newer players that, you know, could be scared of, like, the complexity of crafting, because oftentimes it's like, oh, I got one of this thing, maybe I don't use it. But if you're getting a glut of, you know, things that you can use to modify, then you don't feel as bad about, like, let me just throw it on this item that, you know, has potential to get better.
It's so hard to get Path of Exile players to use their crafting currency to craft with. And it must still be, like, that's must still be a really difficult thing in Path of Exile 2 as well. But yeah, they have made the, like, early game crafting currencies way more common. And I used them and it was phenomenal. Like, the gear progression is really good now, but there's still going to be players who don't use them. You know, there's people who never used all their elixirs in Final Fantasy VII or whatever. So, like, I wonder how do they force players to use them, because they have to, like, get them to use it. It's so important to the gear progression.
Do they just put a wall, like, between Act 1 and 2? Like, you can't pass this unless you use an exalt item right now.
I mean, because they never really want to do that kind of, like, tutorialization stuff, right? So, that is the route you would take with the game, potentially. But so how do they do it if they want to be more subtle about it? It's difficult.
I feel so seen on this. During my playtest, I remember I found an exalt, and I'm still of the mindset when exalts were the best thing you could find. And even knowing that the character was not, you know, they were shutting down everything, I still didn't use it because it was like, no, it's
sent into the void.
It's mine.
You never know. You might need it.
Exactly. Who knows what's going to come around the corner? So that'll be it. That'll be a me issue, using currency if I have to.
I mean, it's a fundamental game of psychology issue, right? That you have to try and solve there. It's like, how do you force people to use their potions? How do you get people to use scrolls in Dungeons & Dragons? It's every RPG I've ever played has suffered with this problem. It's a very difficult question. And so often when you do it, when you finally get them using it and you design the game with that stuff in mind, it's so good. The benefits are, it's an amazing moment when that starts happening, and you start seeing the impacts of that. Because I did that. I used the crafting. I used 7 exalts. I fully crafted a 6 property ring. I fully crafted a weapon. Started, like, trying to craft boots and stuff. And I was like, it was such a cool, like, gear progression experience. I was really thinking about how I did it. Yeah. But how do you get them to use that first one? How do you get them to click that first exalt?
I think what you need to do, Ziggy, as, you know, one of the voices of the community, is just maybe start creating PSAs. It's okay.
I literally was working on that before this show. I'm working on a guide that has a segment that is, the guide that I'm working on is literally called, like, stuff to make your first playthrough more better mindset advice. And then, like, one of the sections is using the currencies and how they plug together. Yes. Yep. I'm trying to do it, but I can only do so much on that one.
It's going to be a mindset shift for sure.
You can yell at people all day to use their items, but some will never listen. They'll never hear you.
I will make this promise. The first exalt I find, I will use in honor of you, Ziggy.
Yes. Do it, and then link the item to me. Show me your item that you exalted. Tell me what you got.
Yeah, we'll exchange our info. so we talk about a glut of new players. We heard Jonathan say that like the servers are prepping for like a million. I feel like that's still not enough.
Crazy. I thought before this, before the Q&A and everything, I was like, this is incredible. But there's no way a paid beta gets more players than like the free-to-play league launches from previous leagues, right? We just had the biggest one ever. I think Settlers was the biggest, or it was like very close. And it's been going up and up and up every single, like their numbers have almost never gone down. They've been, their trend line's constantly gone up, which not many games do that over the course of a decade. But, and yet, like, still no way Path of Exile 2 gets more players than that. And yeah, apparently they're getting like three times that, four times that maybe. We'll see. Crazy.
So well, actually, this is a question I think that only you can maybe answer. Were you getting a sense of the hype on the announcement day while being in the studio? I don't know, like, what their setup is. Are they watching Twitch, or like, are you there with Jonathan?
And... Yeah, I make them put the Twitch chat when I'm doing the Q&A, because like it's good for vibe checking while I'm running the Q&A. Even though I have other people now pulling the questions out of chat and putting them into, you know, my document, it's sort of just really good to have that like wall of spam just to vibe check, like a little green red meter thing. If everyone's chanting the same thing that they really need me to ask about, even though I was already planning on asking about it. But still, no, like I got a good sense of how the community was taking the reveals, which was, as I expected, very good, because it's exactly what the community wanted to see. Like, I knew that was going to be the case. The wider spread hype, yeah, I knew it would get more attention, for sure. I knew it would get mainstream coverage. But not to the, I feel like all the Diablo dads are going to give PoE2 a try for the first time. That's, you know, I've got 18 children and I get 3 minutes to play with the console that I've hidden in a wall in my life. It's like they're gonna try the game for the first time ever. That's exciting. It's nerve wracking. I'm sure PoE's very nervous about that.
Yeah. What was interesting at the press event, there were a few content creators there, and it wasn't just Diablo. There were content creators that focused on Soulsborns, that were Souls streamers. And I thought that was like a brilliant marketing thing of like, hey, let's go and grab these people that are not in the traditional, you know, isometric ARPG space, but like would probably really like this. So I've talked to some other people that I know that are bigger in the Souls community, and they're locked in for Path of Exile well. There's not like, too many people I know that aren't.
Yeah, I mean, we've seen like the Souls like genre get a little bit more RPG-ish over time, right? A bit more gear, a bit more like abilities to progress your character and stuff. And then at the other end, Path of Exile 2 has been creeping in towards those games with now it has engaging enough bosses right from the very outset, right? Path of Exile 1 has had very good bosses for a very long time, but they're like all the way tucked away in endgame for the most part. The act bosses, not very good. Act 2 is a literal standing Dyson vacuum cleaner. That's the boss of Act 2, all right? The first one's a squid that spits at you. So it's it was never really enough to like get those people over playing, but now like the first bosses you encounter in the first few zones, literally that you don't want to spoil the bosses, so like probably the second boss you end up experiencing, a big scary thing that comes out of the ground. I was like, oh man, I feel like I've seen that boss in a Souls game. That's cool. And they're mechanically far more interesting. You got your dodge rolls. you can spam your dodge rolls. There is a parry. Oh my god, there's actually a parry. You can do the shields parry. Yeah. The shields parry. Not a weapon parry. There might be some kind of weapon parry skill. There probably is. But, you got you can do the skill shot shield raise timings. That's totally a thing. Oh, my God.
That's something with the warrior, with the raising of the shield, where I'm like, that is so awesome. Again, I don't have enough time to play with it, but, man, on the 6th.
I messed with that. It was very cool.
It's going to be choice paralysis. Kind of coming back to that reveal, we talked a little bit pre-show. We were shown the cinematic during the event, and they said they weren't going to be showing it. They were like, hey, don't like, we'll just show you this. We think it's really cool, but we're not going to talk about it because we're not, we don't think we're going to have this ready to go for this reveal. I'm like, one, when we were getting time to interview Jonathan, I did have to ask a question about it because, like, how could you not? But, like, from your perspective, Ziggy, there's never been a visual storytelling component to Path of Exile. And then you just get this amazing cinematic to start our journey.
That is a bald-faced lie. Like? I cannot believe you would lie like that. There was a three-second cutscene of Katava moving his finger, okay?
some of the stones did fall off the statue face.
Yeah.
There was that.
There is one cutscene in Path of Exile 1 that's about 3 seconds long. It's a big statue, and the statue is a guy sitting in a chair, and he moves the finger, and it cracks like there's a demon guy inside. That is all we got up to this point. And then all of a sudden they drop a, I don't know, 3-minute cinematic trailer of very, very high quality. And I didn't think I really cared about that, but it was awesome. And I actually was engaged and curious about the plot after watching it, which is not something that I do normally. I only care about vibes in action RPGs. I don't care about the plot. I don't care about, like, the dialogue or anything really, except if people, like, are kind of cool, the enemies are scary, and the zones are interesting. That's all I really want. I want a cool-looking bad guy to hate and blow up. That's all I really care about is the vibes, having a cool setting and cool enemies and things. And Path of Exile 1's plot is pretty hard to follow. So it's a big step up in the storytelling. They're doing a lot more with that, and they're going to great lengths to make it actually good too. Like, I was talking about this recently, but they actually make it so that even in the beta, when there's the early access, when there's not all of the acts, you would assume that the story just cuts off randomly at some point. And I mean, it will, but they're actually doing stuff to make sure that the story will make sense to flow into endgame from that point. So there'll be, like, story elements that are only in the early access ever, and then will be changed on release. So, like, I'm not trying to, like, FOMO people or anything. It's just trying to, it's just that they're actually, like, they care about it to that point that they're actually, like, going out of their way to do something unique for the current awkward half-finished state that the game is in. And that's pretty cool.
It's a nice touch, yeah.
Yeah, cinematic was really cool.
Yeah, I'm with you. Like, my gameplay experiences with mostly any game is, like, escape, skip, space bar, like, where can I move the dialogue along so I can, you know, get back to the action yes. here? But there is something to be said for, like, table setting and getting, like you said, the vibe right. And especially for, I think, like, to me, GGG exists in this, like, indie space, but making what you have to say at this point is a AAA game, right? Like, they have all the bells and whistles of systems and things that you would expect in AAA production for.
I mean, it effectively is at this point, yeah.
Yeah, and so, like, along with that, I think, you know, the fidelity of graphics and things, which is a step up here, clearly. But, you know, cinematics and some of that visual storytelling, like CF mentioned, like, I think that is also an expectation when your game is at a certain level of quality. And so they lean into more of this. To me, it only makes sense to grab the type of player that maybe they haven't had in the past, which is, like, the lore aficionados or the people that care about, like, you know, especially when they hinge so much on campaign being a replayable thing and something that we want players to have a good experience with. To me, that just feeds right into that, right? Like, okay, who are these characters they're introducing? Will I learn about them in the campaign? And so the one just feeds the other, and you know, you get all these new players coming in, new lifeblood.
I mean, that goes into another really important point, though, too, with the campaign replayability. The story, you want the story to be amazing in there for those who want it, but, and Jonathan, I'm so happy to hear that he explicitly said this, that they don't ever want it to be something that interrupts your gameplay unless you want it to. So, like, to the point where he's like, people were telling him, like, oh, why don't you, like, zoom in when people are having a conversation with an NPC in town? Like, he was of the mind that even if you can skip that by, like, walking away and it zooms back out on you, just that act is disruptive to your, like, gameplay flow. So he's like, I would prefer to have it remain zoomed out while you're talking to the NPCs in town, just so that you're not getting this, like, camera thing going on and all of that jazz. So that when you are on your 20th playthrough, you can just walk away and not finish the dialogue. And Path of Exile's always been pretty good about this as well, too, which I get so frustrated in other games when they don't do this, where, like, you have meta-knowledge and are allowed to use it. So on your fifth playthrough, you should be allowed to use your meta-knowledge, I think. And Path of Exile lets you do that. So you know that if you go get this feather from this place, you can just give it to a person. You don't need to go get the quest to do that. You can just complete the quest and then be like, oh, by the way, I already did that, which I always find hilarious, too. It's just like, they're like, oh, can you go get the medicine chest for me? Everybody's dying. Pfft, you mean this? I already did that.
Voila.
Also, I did your next quest. Don't even say, I know it. I already did it. I'm showing initiative. It gets you a promotion for sure. Yeah, that is it's so important to the gameplay flow. And yeah, they're sticking true to their roots with that, which is good.
I can say from like the visual storytelling point, I'm all in on Path of Exile 2, obviously. But I showed it to my 13-year-old son, you know, the kid who, despite his dad's love for ARPGs, plays more Fortnite than anything. You know, like he's a product of that generation, and you know, maybe my wife and I are related or something. I don't know. Like somehow we're raising a Fortnite kid. But he watched the video, and he was like, "Oh, that looks really cool." And when it launches, we're gonna play together. Nice. Like that was a hook for him. Like, and I think like as we're looking at the broader scope of the game, those sometimes it is just a cool cinematic that just draws a player in. Like, yeah, I want to see where this goes. Let's give it a shot. And then going back to like kind of what was said earlier on in the show, you get a player to maps, you've got them till, I mean,
well, that was always the classic line. Go. You own your soul if you get to maps. It was years and years and years ago they said that.
And it is very true. It's kind of a nice segue to like getting to the end here. There's a lot of hype. How do you temper expectations? You know, we were joking pre-show. This game isn't going to end world hunger. Won't usher in world peace.
You know, but with everyone skipping all these lunches, there's going to be more food.
And I mean, people can't be fighting if they're playing Path of Exile. So you get enough people playing and, you know, you never know. But
we're not tempering. No, we're not tempering at all.
We have to temper our expectations. It is not a Path of Exile 2 is not a healthcare plan. It's not a psychiatrist. It can't solve your relationship troubles. Probably.
Might accelerate them? Yeah.
Okay, so here's my advice. Really? All right, tell your family that you're going to be busy with a hobby or with work or whatever you need to tell them. Tell them you're going to be a little bit unreachable for a while. Tell them you love them and make a plan for a point in the future, like a solid plan for like at this point in January 29th, I'm going to go on a trip with you. Well, I'm going to come and see you, and I'm going to bring you a cake. We're going to have a good time together. So make some social plans in advance so that people have something to look forward to if they're not playing PoE with you. Have a backup plan for launch day. The servers are going to be on fire for sure. There's just too many players. There's no way. Like, I know that they're doing these custom-designed load testing technology that I can't even begin to understand that Jonathan was trying to describe to me, but I'm just like, bro, I don't know what you're talking about. This is way too complicated for me. So I know that they're like doing it, and they have like, you know, so much testing under their belt for this stuff, but it's just a whole other level. 300k compared to a million plus or something. It's a thing. So just have a backup plan, you know. Have your Factorio open in the background on launch day for the early access. If you're taking day off work, take the second day off work. You know, maybe even the next one. Yeah, those are good expectations. And remember, it's an early access. The point of it is for them to make this game that's going to be amazing for the next decade. So, and find those various things that they just can't find internally. Like,
you know, oh, go ahead.
Yeah, just, you know, those problems that only show up when you have 100k people do something. Yeah.
To me, that last point is so salient. Like, because of the amount of care and love that has gone into this early access, players are going to forget that yes. that is the state that we're at, and yes, that will raise expectations.
I right? see people already thinking that it's like the game's launch, or feeling like that, or just kind of forgetting that it's an early access. And it will be hard to remember because it is like a very high quality. Act one is probably going to feel a very high quality. You're going to forget that it's early access. And the end game has so much content that you're certainly going to forget that it's early access. I'm sure there'll be points through, like, maybe Act 3 that hasn't been playtested as much, where they'd be like, oh, you'll remember. Okay, all right, this is early access. This thing is not finished. but yeah, you're going to have to actually work to remember that for this one, I think.
Right. I probably haven't helped, because when I was on Kind of Funny talking about it, I did say when it goes and launches live, it's going to be a nominee for Game of the Year. So I'm
they are eligible, apparently.
Well, I'm saying like when next it one. Fully launches, when it breaks out of early access next year, I may not have helped expectations. but at the time, that's what I felt. And I'm going to see if that holds true on the 6th. So as we get to the 6th, what are you doing to kill time?
I wish I had time to kill. There's way too much to prepare. I want to make content about literally everything that is exciting that people should be excited about, and be like, and everything that like makes me go, oh no, what if people are confused about this and they stop playing when they get confused about it? Oh god, I got to make a video about that. And I also want to like, you know, spend some, I'm trying to I care so much about this. I'm trying to like, you know, preempt any potential things that come up, even though it's not my job, I guess. But and I mean, even then, I was just thinking before you started talking, I was like, oh, I should say, if you're a part of Exile 1 veteran, just to like wrap your head around the fact that there's going to be a lot of non-Path of Exile veterans joining. it's extended beyond the core community, and try to be welcoming and helpful. You know, people are going to need a little bit of help and advice. And they're not going to need, you know, certain kinds of like, well, this game is a niche game only for me and my gigantic brain. It's a game for many more people. And then that'll take some getting used to for some people.
I think that's an interesting point, because there is the potential that if this brings in the numbers that they're looking at, the Settlers was what, 400K? Right,
something around there. Yeah,
We talk a million, that's 600,000 people that are now technically outnumbering the veterans. They're actually more.
I was gonna say, players. It's enough to change the culture. It's enough to change the culture of the community. So we can the pre-established players, the like new players, will be looking to us who have been playing the game for a while and have these extra insights. You know, to how we act. In a community sense, they're going to read the room, right? There's like that thing, you step in a room and everyone's talking quietly, you start talking quietly. People are dancing and shouting and yelling over the music. You're going to be more likely to do that too. So we can help guide that culture development, but there'll be a cultural shift potentially. Yeah. It's interesting. Not something I've thought about until now.
Absolutely. I'm excited. Wild.
New blood. Yes.
I think, you know, like I look to you, Ziggy, and I look to, you know, there's a lot of really good Path of Exile creators out there.
Absolutely.
And I think there always is a lot of that sense of like, I know this, let me explain how you can do it, that has made the Path of Exile community so engaging and so receptive to new people. Like,
yeah.
I'm really obsessive about this thing. I want you to be obsessive about this thing too.
So, Path of Exile appeals to a certain brain type that is very good at making and very interested in making tools and making content. The content creator and tool maker scene is overrepresented in the Path of Exile community to a large degree because of that. So, we get some of the best like community made things. Out of almost anything except maybe the VTuber space, those guys are a whole nother level. I recently played some Holocure for an indie tryouts day that I did, and I was like, oh my lord, they made this free game? It's crazy. Just because they're fans? Yeah, so they're pretty wild over there. But apart from them, we do a pretty good job, so.
I think there's also this element of like, proselytizing, where it feels like because Path of Exile has been such a niche product, there are a lot of people that just want others to experience what they have experienced. And so there's a moment of a new player like, oh, please come in. Like, I will help you get to wherever you need to get to like, love this
It's thing very about. Common for Path of Exile 1 players to be like, I can't get any of my friends to play the game.
Yes.
People are like, oh, I'm so glad I can hang out in your stream, Ziggy, and with your Discord, because none of my friends want to play the game. I keep trying, they won't. They're saying now that their friends are going to play the game with them, so... Exciting times. People are excited about that. Yeah, they want to try and make those people, you know, keep playing it.
I think the message is definitely be kind to those that are out there that are starting, and share the knowledge as best you can. And then also get used to not knowing things. There are so many things that are going to be different. Like, how exciting is it to be like not able to know exactly how you're going? Like, every league is different. You have a different goal, but this is a brand new uncharted territory where nothing makes sense.
Yeah, yet. I can't, and I don't want to plan my build like before I start. It's which I would never like go into a league with a fully like with no plans for my builds normally. So it's a different experience there. And yes, another thing I want to teach, like I just want to teach everybody for launch day something I taught my 2-year-old daughter. Which is when you have to be patient, you do this. You go tweedle, tweedle, tweedle. She does a tweedle, tweedle, tweedle. That is a very important skill for launch day, just with the servers and everything, and with the 1.2 million queue that's going to be in front of you. Just tweedle, 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 tweedle. That's what she does when she's waiting for something. You can do it too. She's two. You got this.
I believe that we all can. So as we close out here, Ziggy, where can people find you? And how long are you going to stream on the 6th?
Like any person of current year, you can go to Google and type Ziggy D POE and my stuff will come up. I'm on various of the things. But yeah, I primarily make YouTube content to an obsessive level of quality where I can. while still retaining an authentically artisanal scuffedness, because I do everything myself, so I refuse to relinquish control. So there's a lot of things I don't know how to do in editing, and it can show from time to time. But yeah, you can enjoy some of that artisanal action there. And I do stream a lot on Twitch. I nearly always clicky looty action. I'm clicky looty action RPGs. On the 6th, I will play until I can play no more. That is as simple as that.
Nice.
With brief breaks to go and give my family a huggle every now and then.
All right. Well, this has been episode 1 of Raycast. Thank you guys for tuning in, and stay sane, Exiles.